You are listening to an InsightView.eu podcast. Over the past week, InsightView.eu has produced a series of podcasts leading up to the 20th Party Congress of the Communist Party of China. In this connection, InsightView has also interviewed Jens Eskeland, Vice President of the European Chamber in China. In the podcast, we talk about Chinese politics and in which direction President Xi Jinping intends to move China.
First, Jens Eskelund, thank you for once again helping the listeners better understand what is going on in China. Let's start with the economic situation in the country. You have just returned to China after a short stay in Denmark. In Europe, we are currently talking about a tsunami heading towards us caused by the energy crisis. How would you describe the economic situation in China?
Where to begin? If you can point to individual factors that are right now impacting the outlook and the economy in Denmark, I think we are seeing a conspiration of a great many factors right now impacting the Chinese economy. And I think what we have seen is, in particularly over the past 6 months, is a rapid deterioration, not just for the outlook for the performance of the Chinese economy here in 2022, but also in the coming years. And I think that a consensus is beginning to form that the years of very high growth are definitely behind us. And it seems that a consensus is beginning to form that we will see for a great many years going forward, a significantly more moderate growth. I think the latest consensus I saw reported by Bloomberg just coming out was talking about 3.5% for 2022, and that's down almost 2 percentage points compared to the beginning of the year. But I think China is impacted by a great many things. The state of the real estate sector is well known. That has been going on for a few years now, and we are beginning really to see now how that's impacting many various sectors of the economy. COVID, obviously, also. And I think it's been quite dramatic to see how much tighter China is being controlled this year compared to, for example, last year in 2021. We were actually able to travel relatively freely around China in 2021, and there were few restrictions. But what we have seen in 2022, in particular after Omicron came, was that we are seeing low-scale breakouts in most provinces around the country. And of course, we saw the big one in Shanghai back in April, May this year. And that continues to have a big impact. All of Chengdu is presently locked down. The fourth largest city in China and the major economic center in western China. We have most of Shenzhen in lockdown now. One of the absolute top economic centers in China. So it's hard really to exaggerate the impact. We are beginning to see now also that there is a spillover unemployment, and it's quite shocking to see, frankly, how in particular youth unemployment has shot up. The latest statistic I saw, and these are Chinese official statistics, pegged youth unemployment at 19.9%, and I think that is very, very high by Chinese standards. We are also beginning to hear anecdotal evidence and from many, many quarters in China that government officials are perhaps not paid on time. Some are being asked to pay back bonuses that they received for 2021. When you walk around in the big cities, you can see that a greater number of shops, in particular smaller shops, mom and pop shops and restaurants, they have simply closed up because of lack of business. So there is clearly drains in the economy, and China is in a difficult place right now. And I think it's also reflected in the way that the government is talking about it now and some of the initiatives that they're trying to launch. But no doubt about it, China is in a hard place right now. We just saw the trade figures coming out. There was not much to cheer for there. Both import and export figures came out below expectations. And I think what ought perhaps be a little bit of a worry for the Chinese leadership is that we saw also export figures coming out a little bit below expectations. I think they were up 7% or so year on year in August, which was a bit disappointing. And that's disappointing in particular because export was really the one thing in the economy that that has performed very well. So let's see.
Is the economic situation in China worse today than in 2008? And if so, what is the difference?
I think it is different in many ways today. I think China as an economy is a very different place than it was in 2008. In 2008, irrespective of what happened globally, there was a very significant momentum in the economy. The real estate sector was taking off, and we saw even during the crisis there was, I think, 1 or 2 years where there was flat growth in real estate prices, but otherwise it has just gone one way and that's up. And the economy was somewhere between a quarter and a third the size it was today. There was so much momentum and there was so much unfulfilled potential yet for the Chinese economy to grow. It has matured a lot since then, and that of course also makes it more difficult to find these big pockets of growth potential. They are there, and there's a lot of things I think that China can do to continue to grow, but it's not as easy as it was at that time. And of course also the kind of money that you would need to kickstart the economy would be quite different considering that the economy is 3 to 4 times bigger. Also from a debt perspective, China is a quite different place today, with the debt standing at around, I think it's around 300% to GDP.
Taking the housing sector crisis into consideration, is it wrong to say that China is maybe already in recession?
I think perhaps it depends a little bit on what definition you put you put down of that. But I think if you sort of use the definition that we apply in the West, which I think it's 2 consecutive quarters with negative growth, I'm not sure that technically we are there yet. But I think it's obvious that the effects that we are seeing in the economy right now are effects that look quite similar to what you would see in a recession.
How has the leadership in Beijing responded to the economic downturn, and especially also compared to 2008?
I think, unfortunately, that the leadership in Beijing has responded with more of the same old toolbox, focusing on infrastructure investment and supply side support, which I think does not really address some of the fundamental issues in the Chinese economy. It is something that to some extent will provide a band-aid in some places and for some sectors, but I don't see it as something that will fundamentally contribute to change the outlook of the Chinese economy and provide lasting relief. And I don't think clearly that they have the means to do something on a scale that would have the same impact as we saw in 2008 due to the reasons I mentioned before, debt levels and the presence, much larger size of the Chinese economy. And we should also keep in mind that there are limits to how far they want to go. Deleveraging has been a big priority for the Chinese government the past few years, and it remains so. So I think that they will be cautious going forward. Then, of course, there is the aspect of what really are the returns that China is getting now on adding more infrastructure projects. And what we have seen over the past several years is that the return on infrastructure investments are beginning to decline. The quick wins have been had, and the government is increasingly aware also that it is not contributing, creating much value in the longer term, building bridges to nowhere. So attractive, shovel-ready infrastructure projects are getting fewer and far between. And that, of course, also makes it a little bit more difficult to use the old model.
So you don't expect to see a new mother of all fiscal and monetary stimulus measures like in 2008?
I think that there will be constraints that put limitations to what they want to do. It's not something that we see happening now. But then again, let's see over the next few months how things develop. How much worse it gets if China somehow through other means manages to turn around the situation. But it's not something that I see as a base case, and I'm not sure that it would be wise either.
Is Beijing today using fiscal and monetary easing to put out fires that President Xi Jinping in particular has started?
I'm not sure it would be entirely fair to put it all on President Xi. I think what we have seen in the real estate industry is something that has been underway for a long time, and I think that the analyst has been calling out some of the structural issues related to financing there for many, many years. And you can then say that maybe the mistake was that something was not done earlier, and then the recent mistake, as exemplified by the three red lines, is perhaps an example of the tools being applied being a little bit too blunt and having too harsh an effect. I think one thing that you can put on the leadership now is the COVID policies. And I think more than just throwing a lot of good money after bad in terms of infrastructure constructions, one thing that would contribute significantly to improve the mood and the economy in the short term would be if something happened with all these COVID restrictions. I think one thing that we are all looking for, that is an exit strategy. We all know what is happening now, but we do not have really a clear view of how China envisages that the country is going to eventually emerge out of this situation, where you have a situation where the rest of the world basically is treating COVID as endemic, and where China still insists that it's able to put it out. That is simply not sustainable in the long term. So what we are hoping will happen very soon is that there will be light at the end of the tunnel, and that we get some indication of really what is the strategy, what is it that will take China out of the present situation as regards COVID.
Wouldn't it be easier and cheaper to reverse many of Xi Jinping's corporate hostile policies and a highly peculiar, as you mentioned, COVID strategy, which has undermined consumer confidence and business sentiment?
I think the easy one, obviously, maybe it's not exactly easy, but I think it's simple, perhaps, that would be, as I mentioned before, to articulate an exit strategy for COVID that gives something that resembles a roadmap for companies and individuals. I'm not really sure that I agree entirely with your question, with the way you posed the question about corporate hostile policies. I think there are a lot of things that we see also in regulation that could be perceived as corporate hostile, for example, in regards to national security regulation, cyber regulation, and what have you not. But I think also we should keep in mind that you can find yourself in a quite different situation. When you go out where the rubber meets the road, you go to the provinces, you go to the municipalities, and you talk to local government officials, you engage with them in regards to investments or collaboration, that they are indeed rolling out the red carpet. It's hurting right now in the provinces, and anything that generates jobs, tax payments, economic activity generally is very, very welcome. I do perceive that there is a high degree of willingness to support companies at a local level, notwithstanding the noise sometimes coming out in Beijing.
Jens, I sense considerable dissatisfaction with President Xi Jinping. Maybe I'm wrong, which the Chinese do little to hide. It feels as if the Chinese no longer believe that tomorrow will be better than today. What is the main explanation behind this dissatisfaction?
I'm not sure that I agree entirely with you that there's widespread considerable dissatisfaction with Xi Jinping. There is probably in certain strata of society, but my feeling is actually that generally there is a high level of support of the government. I think still that they're running a little bit on the fumes of the goodwill that was earned last year when, as was broadcast very widely in China, how well China did in terms of handling COVID relative to the rest of the world. Of course, that story is beginning to change a little bit as the rest of the world, for all intents and purposes, has opened up entirely. But I still think that, you know, there is a significant level of pride in what China has achieved, and there is genuine anxiety when you look at the broader population in regards to COVID. But I do sense that there is a creeping feeling that, you know, maybe tomorrow is not going to be better than today. And I think that's also one of the reasons that you are seeing consumption not growing anymore. People are simply saving for a rainy day. They're beginning to see that the value of their property, where I think it's 70 or 80% of Chinese fortunes, they are bound up in property, that they are seeing that, you know, property prices are not rising. In some instances, they're actually falling. And I think that sort of gives rise to a little bit of anxiety as to what tomorrow will bring. And I think the question is, in such a situation where there is increasing insecurity in regards to the future, will the government continue to have these high approval ratings? The old social contract with people in China was that, you know, the party is legitimate because it's the party that delivers on growth and welfare and increasing standards of life. Is that, if that equation suddenly changes, what is going to take the place? And I think that will be very interesting to see.
What is President Xi Jinping's political direction? And is this strategy supported by a majority in the Communist Party?
Political direction, I think he has an overarching aim, which I think has been articulated fairly clearly already, of turning China into a superpower and a leading superpower in all respects, economically, militarily, culturally, scientifically, by 2049, and into an industrialized country by 2035. So I think that's sort of the overarching context. What is interesting for us to follow is, of course, how specifically Xi Jinping thinks that China is going to get to that aspiration, and that's perhaps where, in some respects, that we could be a little bit nervous about what specifically that may entail. Questions that comes to mind in that respect is the role of the state in the economy, and what we have seen in recent years is that there is a focus on growing the state sector and creating globally leading state-owned titans that are able to grow and become globally leading exactly because they have the political support in China. That means that they are competing in different ways that the Western companies are competing. It's not market-based, and they are not subject to the same constraints, for example, when it comes to financing. And I think a challenge for non-Chinese companies and governments will be to say, you know, going forward, how are we going to deal with that kind of competition? what we could be a little bit concerned about is that it will be with a continued focus on growing the state-led part of the economy, that China is not to the same extent as earlier allow the private economy, which is more productive, which is more efficient, which is creating more jobs, allow that to contribute in the same ways as it has in the past. We are a little concerned about things like dual circulation. Does that mean that China will pursuing an even more mercantilistic trade policy? What is common prosperity going to mean? Are we going to see redistribution on a big scale? What's the future of the tech industry in China, and so on? Will China be able to re-energize the real estate sector, which accounts for such a big part of the economy? So I think there are many, many questions and many things that we need to follow going forward. Then, of course, there is China's emergence or ambitions in the Asia Pacific. And right now, that is obviously something that we are following very closely, what is going on across the Taiwan Strait in China-US relations.
How come do you fear what is going to happen in the future if you don't see the same hostile policy today?
I think you will get a different reply depending on what kind of company you ask. And I think there's always a danger, in particular when it comes to China, when you try to generalize. I think the government realizes that they still need some foreign companies, types of foreign companies, to contribute to the economy, to help China with some of the problems, the most significant problems they have. One of them is to grow productivity. And I think they realize that in many, many sectors, they will only be able to grow productivity if they have access to Western technology. Then there will be other sectors which China would regard as perhaps being important from a national security perspective, where it will be very, very difficult for foreign companies to compete, or sectors where China wants to grow national champions, globally leading companies. So I think really that you need to get down to a granular level and say, you know, how do you fit in within China's development aspirations to really gauge what would your chances of success be on the Chinese market? And frankly, that would probably be industries where it doesn't make sense to consider China. I think pretty much everything related to digital content probably has a difficult future in China.
But Jens, in the future, is there room for a new Alibaba and a new Tencent? Will the party allow new power centers to develop in the private sector?
I think it's a very good question. My gut feeling is yes, and that is based on that even though the government has been cutting down Alibaba and Tencent to size over the past year, and the tech sector has come under a lot more scrutiny, I think there's no doubt also that the tech sector has been critical towards bringing China to where it is today, and also that the government see these companies as being instrumental towards realizing the goals. What I think we are going to see, and what we are already seeing right now, is that the government and the party will take a much more direct role, for example, through investments in companies so that they have a seat at the board. That's one of the things that we have seen in the recent few years, that they have gone in and begun to take equity shares in a lot of these companies that allow them to have a say at the table. And I think that's a model we will see expanded on going forward.
Jens, you mentioned common prosperity. From many Western economists' point of view, China needs to boost the purchasing power of the Chinese consumer through a more fair distribution of income and wealth. Interestingly, most China experts have forecast this to happen in the past. However, nothing has happened. How come?
I think part of it has been systemic. There has been a reluctance to transfer resources from the state to individuals. Part of it being that it reduces the room for the state to maneuver. what we have seen historically has been a focus on supporting the supply side and not so much the demand side. And I think that is one thing that China will need to consider very seriously. I think it goes against all the instincts of the party to consider or to implement policies that would actually lead to a wealth transfer from the state to the individuals. But I think it is critical if China is going to use consumption as a driver in the economy going forward. And I think it needs to be broad-based. I mean, people need simply put to have more money in their pockets and being paid a bigger share of the value that they create. But it's also a matter of trying to eliminate some of the uncertainties that people are facing today, inadequate pensions, in some cases prohibitively expensive healthcare, and so on. So both, transferring real wealth into the pockets of individuals, but also creating a higher level of security, which will make the famously high savers in China maybe feel comfortable about spending a little bit more.
In light of what you told me in this podcast, what would you advise European companies that plans to invest or do business in China?
I think it depends a little bit where you are. I think right now, where we are and where I am based in China and having the ability to engage with local authorities and meet partners here and seeing that there actually is a big appetite, there will be good deals to be made. But if you're sitting on the outside and you're trying to come to China and you are going to navigate all these COVID controls with all it entails, and you will be dependent on being able to travel back and forth, now is perhaps not the time. Then probably I'll be sitting on my hands a little while and wait for this to blow over and then do it. But for us, again, for us who are here, I think when there is a crisis, and I think we can call it a crisis that we have right now, there will also be opportunities. And I think for us who are here, we should try and see if there are such opportunities that could be exploited.
Jens, one last question. I want a stable relationship between the European Union and China because we need each other. However, since President Xi Jinping gained power a decade ago, everything has moved in the wrong direction. At least from my point of view, can the relationship between the EU and China still be saved, or is it too late?
It's hard to be super optimistic right now. I think that there is a genuine wish actually in China to find a common way forward with Europe. I think it's very, very difficult for China, if not impossible, to give some of the concessions that would be expected from Europe on some of the things that are important to Europe, for example, in regards to human rights and others, which are very thorny. But I think that the wish is there, and I think that's a good starting point. I can see very clearly when you read in Chinese media that the US and Europe is treated in different ways. I think there is probably also by now a waning optimism that that China and EU might be able to find a third way. But I think there is still a hope that that Europe will indeed pursue strategic autonomy as EU has said it would. I think the tricky point is whether China will be able to position itself in a way where it does not inadvertently push the EU further into alignment with the US, and that could very well be the case. But I would hope that both parties go to this with an open mind and try genuinely to see whether compromises can be found on some of the most significant sticky points. I have to say I'm not very optimistic, but I think we owe it to everyone in China and Europe to give it a try.
Thank you, Jens, for participating in this podcast.
My pleasure.